So anyway, we've got the camera running here. I've also got a little camera now. I'd like to just say a couple of words that filming prisoners of war, although Aidan is, I will say this, as it is, a mercenary. There are protocols governing that. As per the Geneva Convention, I shall be adhering not only to them, given that Aidan is, as I say, a mercenary, those don't necessarily apply, but because we're all good, nice, polite people here, we shall adhere to not only the protocols and the covenants of the Geneva Convention, but also this will be uploaded to YouTube, so the applicable YouTube guidance. Aidan, we'd just like to confirm that you're speaking of your own will. There's not going to be any pressure or anything like that. You are fed, watered. Basically, you agreed to...
Yeah, I agreed to this. I asked for this.
So this is of your own will?
Yeah.
And there's not going to be any coercion. Your answers should be taken as your truthful representation of your actual position. There's going to be no exertion of any coercion or anything like that. We'd like to pass on in the first case that your family have obviously been concerned about, your sister Shannon Tynegate.
Yeah.
And so your mother, is it Angela?
Yeah, Angela.
Have also been very concerned about you, so that's been in the media a lot. From my side, I'd like to say that you're a lucky guy. I mean, this is basically a week in captivity, isn't it?
Yeah, I'd say lucky, to say the least. Probably extremely lucky to be alive, considering the situation that happened in Mariupol.
I mean, really, basically, if you look at the... I don't know if you've seen the videos, I know you've been quite active online, but can you describe any of the videos you've seen of when Russian soldiers have been taken captive by Ukrainian soldiers, and what's happened to them?
From the videos I've seen online of Russian soldiers being captured, Ukrainian soldiers haven't adhered to the Geneva Conventions.
Right.
There's been a lot of war crimes that have taken place, like from what I've seen. A lot of it's down to the Nazi groups like Azov Battalion and Right Sector, and a lot of nationalists as well, from what I can see.
So you understand, let's get down to the nitty-gritty. We're talking about absolute barbarism. We're talking about videos of Russian soldiers, servicemen killed by stabbing them in the eyes, tortured, mutilated, slaughtered.
Yeah.
By your colleagues, your comrades, Aidan. I mean, come on.
I don't promote this. Like, if I ever saw anyone doing anything like that, I'd try to intervene, because first and foremost, like, just because it's the enemy, they shouldn't be treated any less than once they drop their rifle and then that's them finished. And I think that people that do these crimes, they should be punished to the fullest extent. Which, with the Ukrainian military, I doubt they're going to even care about it.
I mean, we're talking about... I would say there's no words to describe people like that, but we're talking about Ukrainian soldiers. I'm going to use a few choice words to describe them. Animals,
yeah.
Scumbags, barbarians. Your comrades, Aidan. What are we talking about here? How has this ended up that you're on that side?
I made a stupid choice. I easily misread the information and joined the wrong side.
You know, you've ever seen... I don't know if you've seen a sketch by Mitchell and Webb. They're dressed up in Nazi-style uniforms.
Yeah. I've seen that.
And one side says, are we the bad guys?
Yeah. After Mariupol, because of my situation during the operation, like, we were in Mariupol, it wasn't till this whole operation started that I started realising to the extent of, like, the reality of, like, Ukraine.
I mean, you're a 28-year-old man from
yeah.
Nottingham. You came over... Can you give a little background as to how you came to join the Ukrainian forces? I believe, was it the 36th Marine...
Yeah, 1st Battalion, 36th Marine Brigade.
Mm-hmm. How you came to join, when, and what motivated you to do that?
So, I first came to Ukraine back in February 2018.
Uh-huh.
Previously, before that, I was in Syria, in Kurdistan, with the Kurds. And I had met someone who was previously in Ukraine. And before this point, I was pro-Russian, pro-Donbass. I'd like been following accounts such as yourself since the very beginning. And then when I was in Syria, I'd met this acquaintance who was also in Ukraine, had a few political debates with him, and eventually, like, he managed to tell me about information and then show me stuff, and then obviously a lot of it was like misleading information, so I was easily misled.
So you were at the time in your mid-20s, impressionable?
Yeah, impressionable was the word.
And you ended up... But there comes a point, okay, then, there comes a point that now you've ended up where you are, and obviously I know you've appealed to the British government, and it's easy from where you are to renounce everything from the position that you've ended up in, but there comes a point that you must accept responsibility for the decisions
you've
made.
Of course, the responsibility must be accepted. For me, though, I'm just saying, when this operation started, the days before it, I never agreed with Ukraine's decision to, if you remember, Russia recognised Donbass and Luhansk as independent.
Luhansk.
Mm-hmm. As independent. And I'd always wanted it to just finish, and I thought, given the circumstances, Ukraine would do the appropriate choice, but they...
But you've been serving for years in the Ukrainian army.
Yeah.
Now, obviously, you know, you're socially aware in terms of social media,
yeah,
and all the rest of it. So in that time, you must have surely done some research, looked on Google, checked out the Azov battalion, for example.
Yeah.
You must have seen the signs that they wear, the wolf's angle. You must have worked out that these guys are Nazis.
Previously, we had never really worked closely with Azov, like, up until we came to Mariupol. A day in Mariupol was just the amount of destruction, and it was one of the videos I saw of one of the other journalists that was in Mariupol, where Azov were driving down the street, like, using civilian buildings for cover, like, while there's active fighting going on. It was then, like, I started to change my opinion. I've always thought they were, like far right, but I tried to convince myself maybe it will change for the better. But especially after the base was taken, and, like, the amount of, like, Nazi paraphernalia that was, like, found there, like, it's blatantly obvious, like, they're just Nazis.
I'm going to give you the opportunity, then, from Brit to Brit, in your own words, your relationship now, and what should people in the UK know, and how should they relate to the Azov Battalion, which is a battalion of the Ukrainian Armed Forces.
Yeah. So, for those unaware that don't follow the news or anything, Azov Battalion basically was created in 2014, I believe. Its leader, I can't remember his name.
Andrei Belinsky.
He's connected to, like, very, like, far-right, like, neo-Nazi organisations. He stepped away officially, but, like, if you look hard enough, you can see, like, he's actually still in control. The majority of the members...
They wear Nazi symbols.
Yeah,
they chant Nazi salutes.
The salutes and the Azov...
The wolf single.
The wolf single. They wear that proudly. A lot of the traditions they do is also traditions from, like, Nazi military traditions that they try to reenact.
So surely, at some point, you've got to where you are, where you're in captivity, but you are lucky to be alive. There are going to be people watching this from all over the UK. Okay, so you've got to where you are, but surely there were so many steps along the way that you could have, of your own will, said, look, I'm not being part of this, I'm not fighting with what are, and I'm not putting words in your mouth, I'm simply stating objective facts, I'm not fighting with Nazis.
Yeah, it's just, I just never came into contact with them until, like, till this situation came into play. I was hoping to finish my contract and go home, leave Ukraine with my wife, but this war happened because Ukraine doesn't want peace.
Okay. So along the way, you then obviously are in service, military service. Can you describe your duties and your experience of combat and what exactly, and honestly here, what exactly you've done as a military, as a serving member of the Ukrainian Armed Forces?
So for the past 3 years, first I was in 137th Brigade, Battalion in 35th Brigade. I was in infantry for approximately five or six months, roughly. I was gunner for Kepoveta. We didn't really do much because of situation on contact lines, so we rotated for a few months, and then I put a request in to transfer to the 36th Brigade, 1st Battalion. Upon arrival, I was put into Air Assault Company. We did some training. We did our jumps from helicopter, and then we rotated to the front line annually. And then last year I signed a year extension onto my contract with Mortar Company. Basically my duty was to prepare the mortars and then give them to the firer so they can fire it. So that's what I've been doing for the past 6 months.
So for the past 6 months you've been preparing artillery, which has then been fired.
Yeah.
And where has that been fired?
This was in the village of Pavlopol, like where we were stationed. So we were firing it at like enemy positions.
And you say enemy positions, Aidan, you say enemy positions, but we're now in the city of Donetsk, where for the last 8 years, Ukrainian forces have been shelling not enemy positions, but civilians.
Yeah.
Killing thousands of civilians, children, for 8 years. So you're telling me that you think that you were shelling military positions, and yet for 8 years your colleagues have been openly, and in fact glorifying and celebrating in shelling, in killing, in inflicting untold misery and suffering on the people of Donetsk.
Yeah. As I said before, because we were mostly stationed in the south, like I never really knew what the reality of like the situation was up here. We were mostly based around the Pavlopol area. Once the first day of the operation started, my commander asked me to, well, they told everyone to go to like battle stations. I told my commander I'm not firing, I want to desert. He said, okay, you can go. At that time, it was pretty impossible.
So when did you say you wanted to desert?
The first day of the operation.
Uh-huh. So this is February the 24th.
Yeah.
And what motivated that?
I didn't want this war. I was hoping previously upon the build-up, like, something peaceful might happen. But that never happened. And then once we were pushed back within a day, we were pushed back to the village of Zara, I think it's pronounced, I'm not sure.
Near Mariupol.
Yeah, north of Mariupol. And again, I asked my commander, like, I want to leave, like, can I leave? He said, yeah, you can leave. The only problem was that I couldn't find any transport to leave. So
what motivated this? You've been serving for years, and then you want to leave. But then you keep fighting on. I just can't believe that, probably, if I'm being honest.
So up until like 6 months ago, I signed a new contract, like for 1 year extension, because my wife is in Mykolaiv, and at that time I didn't realise we'd be doing another rotation because we'd literally just come back from one like 6 months before. So as far as I was aware, we would be doing like guard duty and like training in Mykolaiv. And then after like 2 months, my commander told all of us to get ready to go for rotation. So then that happened, and then slowly, like, we had the whole incident with like Russian politics and like Western politics,
and watching this slowly, like it was like aiming for like a possible scenario of conflict, but there was always every opportunity that Ukraine was given to de-escalate, they blatantly ignored.
Right, Ukraine had 8 years to recognize the republics, to recognize the results of the referendum in 2014.
My biggest problem with the Ukrainian authorities was the recognition of Crimea as Russian territory, because as you said, it's been 8 years. Like, regardless of what anyone thinks.
Tell me, whose territory is Crimea?
Russian.
On the Donetsk and the Luhansk People's Republics?
Independent, like Donbass peoples and Luhansk. They've had 8 years, like this war's been going for 8 years.
The Azov Battalion, I'm going to hit this point again. How to describe the Azov Battalion?
Fanatics, criminals, Nazis.
Okay. I mean, you accept that you're lucky.
Yeah, I'm lucky and I'm grateful.
And how's your detainment? How's your detention? Can you describe your circumstances, your situation?
It's been good. It's better than what I was expecting it to be. For the past month and a half when we were under siege, I was basically on guard duty in our battalion headquarters because of my previous attempt to desert, and the reaction of a lot of the Ukrainians that were serving alongside me were mostly ignorant or didn't want to accept the fact that we will lose this battle, which I told them we won't win, like we should just surrender already.
And how did you come to be taken into captivity?
So on, I think it was last Monday, the remaining Ukrainian forces, our commander came to us previously because they had been preparing the vehicles with armoured shielding. And basically our commander came to us and he gave us three options. He said, either you can try walking out and try sneaking out somehow, or you can go in the military convoy, which is being modified with armour and stuff to try and break through. Or three, you can surrender to Russian and DNR forces. I chose number three because I'm not an idiot and I know what the situation is.
So you ended up with no food, with no nothing, didn't you?
Yeah, the Ukrainian military left us. My humble opinion about Mariupol is we should have left it, left Donbass when we were given the opportunity. But instead, our commanders told us to stay in Mariupol and do it to the last man, which is reckless.
In the UK, Aidan, as we've discussed, your family are worried about you. You'd like to give you the opportunity to say some words to camera, to speak directly to camera, to your family.
So Diane, my
wife, I want you to know, I love you. And I hope that the British government is able to push this prisoner exchange so that I can return to you and we can build our life in Britain. My mother, my brother and rest of my family, I also love you and I hope to see you guys soon, hopefully, if this exchange with prisoners is done.
Okay. I mean, you understand we're out of the jurisdiction here of the British government. You're really...
Yeah.
As it's being positioned in the British media, you're being held by, inverted commas, by bad Russians. And as I say, your own Twitter account is pumping out a stream of anti-Russian bile and hatred as you're being positioned in Sky, BBC, the Daily Mail, etc. As some kind of, I don't know, they're trying to position you as some sort of a hero who went to fight for Ukraine, but now you've ended up being taken by the Russians, who we're told the worst things about exclusively, and yet here you are in captivity for a week. You look absolutely okay to me,
yeah,
in decent health.
Firstly, for people that say I'm a hero, I'm not a hero. I try to desert. That's not something a hero would do. Secondly, my treatment's been good. I've not been beaten or anything. It's it's been better than what I actually thought it was going to be. Like when we were surrendering, I was scared to death of like what might happen. I thought I was going to be lined up and shot, but it's been quite the opposite. Like we've been given food, water, access to speaking to journalists. I had asked previously to speak to Western journalists, and they went through with that and brought journalists. They brought Italian journalist Graham today. So I'm deeply thankful for that.
And particularly as well, I think, Aidan, to just compare that, I'd like to, I think, really to get your thoughts on the fact that your colleagues, the barbarism, the brutality towards Russian prisoners of war. Well, an interesting point is, let's be honest here, let's say things as they are, that your family have appealed for Russia to adhere to the Geneva Convention. Technically, you're a mercenary, so that doesn't apply to you. However, you're still being treated well. You're here, we're speaking, you're fed, you're watered, etc. Well, on the other side, we've seen Russian servicemen butchered, tortured, slaughtered by your colleagues, your comrades. I mean, how does that make you feel?
It annoys me, like, because I did believe in Ukraine. But as I said, like, after all this, like, the real reality of, like, what's behind, like, a lot of the people who seem nice, the reality of their actions has been shown, and they're not as good as they say they are, especially with the videos that we've all seen.
We're talking about evil here.
Yeah, this is like stuff that the comparable to the Nazis did when they would capture like prisoners.
And who for you is Stepan Bandera?
Fascist. I don't like him. I've always believed he's a fascist, and I could never really grasp why Ukraine wanted him, like, around.
Did you ever take part in any of the chants, any of the Slava Ukraine, or any of these neo-Nazi fascist chants that they use?
We use, in the military, they use Slava Ukraine as, like, a national greeting.
Which was used in World War II by the Ukrainian Insurgent Army, also Nazis.
Yeah. So we use that as a greeting in the Ukrainian military.
How do you feel about that now?
I don't want to use it anymore. For me, after this, I have no care for Ukraine.
Like, and let's break it down, Aidan. In the United Kingdom, in the British media, it's categorically delineated down the lines of the Ukrainians are the good guys, the Russians are the bad guys. Tell me, from one who now has experience of both sides, what's the reality?
Ukraine's not the good guys. If Ukraine was the good guys, we would have left Mariupol. Our commanders would have told us to leave Donbass. In realistic terms, they would have told us to pull back to the lines of, I think it's Zaporizhia, and just allow the DNR to take Mariupol and the cities peacefully. Instead, they told us to stay in Mariupol, and now if we look at Mariupol, it's no worse than Stalingrad.
And do you know there was a referendum in Mariupol in 2014? The people overwhelmingly voted to join the Donetsk People's Republic, but for 8 years they were held basically captive by the Azov Battalion in a reign of terror.
Yeah.
I'm not putting words into your mouth.
No, I know this. I remember seeing this.
Constitutional facts.
Azov's influence in Mariupol was massive, like in terms of like military support that they received from the state. It was actually during this operation, we actually got to see how much support they got. I saw brand new American armored Humvees that had obviously been given to Azov instead of like the regular military.
And who were these guys? Describe them to me. These the Azov.
The ones I had seen when they came by. We had a few instances where they came by with their commander to speak to our commander. They looked the typical like hooligan, like sort of like build tattoos everywhere. There was a couple of Croatians with them, and they didn't seem like they were the normal kind of like nationalists. They seemed more far right because they had like patches with swastikas. I tried speaking to one and he just like laughed at me because I was in the Marines.
I get it. All over the world, Aidan, people are going, they're being even in the case of the British government. There is, of course, a law that... I mean, you're a British citizen with also a Ukrainian...
I'm in process of Ukrainian citizenship.
You're a British citizen?
Yeah.
There is a law that British citizens should not take part, obviously, are forbidden to take part in conflict. However, in the case of Ukraine, everything has been waived, it's a free-for-all, and even in the words of Liz Truss, you've been encouraged... Men from the UK have been encouraged to come and take up arms fighting on the Ukrainian side. What would you like to say, not only to the UK, but to those from around the world thinking of coming, or rather going to Ukraine, because here we're in Donbass, this is not Ukraine, this is the Donetsk People's Republic. What would you say to those thinking of going to Ukraine to take up arms on the Ukrainian side?
Don't do it, you'll be used. Obviously... To the person that will be viewing this, thinking about going, like, you'll be thinking, like, it's someone putting this into my mouth. But I tell you, like, now, like, 100%, like, if you go, you're an idiot, like myself. Like, we were used, we were easily tossed aside when forgotten about. If there's people that think they're going to be coming out to be the hero, like, don't even think about coming out. There's no point. And the British government need to stop supporting like citizens to go fight alongside the Ukrainians.
These are all words. In fact, to get that point again of communication, even your own Twitter account is not you that operates that.
No,
it's very active.
It's operated by a Canadian, like one of my old like Canadian friends. I just gave it to him because I trusted him to like run it, but like
because that's come out now with a virulent stream of anti-Russian.
But from I've told him before, like
vile.
Like to stop posting like the anti-Russian stuff, because when I was like running it, I hated the like it's not us or them. It's like with the same sides. Like we should be treated like non-biasedly.
Uh-huh.
When we're reporting stuff, but yeah, I haven't had any.
And to your countrymen, Aidan, speak to people in the UK as they look at this. What should they think of? I mean, to me, I'm going to say it as it is.
Yeah.
And they're not going to. You're a man that's made a massive mistake. In fact, let's take that point. It's easy to speak words and words. You're now lucky to be in a place that your colleagues have been, your comrades have been bombing for 8 years, killing untold misery and death here in Donetsk, from those who wear the same flag that you were wearing just a...
We'll state a fact here, Aidan. It's obviously not a nice one to state, but the penalty in the Donetsk People's Republic for being... You're a mercenary.
Yeah.
Do you accept that you're a mercenary?
Yeah.
What are you, Aidan?
A mercenary.
Uh-huh. Okay. It is a death penalty. Can you give a reason as to why that shouldn't apply to you?
I can't think of any like good logical reason other than to spare my life and exchange it for someone that's in Ukrainian captivity that could return to their family. So I think that would be one of the good reasons to keep me and exchange me for someone such as Viktor Medvedchuk, so he can return to his family.
Okay, and what would you like to say? Obviously, I've been following your case, and I've been following reaction. You understand there are a lot of people who are very angry with you in Donbass, in Russia. I'd like to look to camera. What would you like to say to the people of Donbass?
So, I know you hate me, and sorry can only get you so many emotions, but like it doesn't express like my true like apologies for being in the circumstances in which I am. If I could take it back, I would have left long ago. But that's not the case. What's done is done. All I can ask is that you forgive me and accept that I surrendered and tried to desert from the Ukrainian forces. I can't think of much more there is that will...
What do you know about the city? We're in the city of Donetsk just now. What do you know about the city of Donetsk, Aidan?
I just know it's the regional capital of the DNR.
So founded in 1869 by a Welshman.
Yeah, by a Welshman.
John Hughes.
I don't know too much about the city itself, as we were mostly based down south.
City of a million
but
people.
I can say, you said previously about the bombing. So as I said, because we'd served mainly like down south in the Marine area control, I'd never really been to the Donetsk region front lines before. But at the moment we're here in Donetsk, and like in my cell I can hear the bombing, and that's like a big like wake up call for me, because previously before you see on the news like there's some fight, there's like fights taking place in Donetsk. You never see like the bombing from Ukrainian media.
How much do you feel that you were misled by the media, by propaganda? How much did that influence your decision to take up arms with the Ukrainian side?
I would say probably 70%, and then the remainder would be just my wife, because she's Ukrainian, and yeah, I'd say that'd be correct. It's just.
And how accurate are the BBC, Sky, etc., the Daily Mail, and their reflection of the situation in Donbass, in Ukraine?
Daily Mail, I wouldn't trust by a mile, because of some of the previous stuff they've posted where they just get information like straight up wrong. BBC also, they have an agenda. So 1 minute they can be pro you, and then next minute they're pro someone else. CNN, we don't need to speak about them, because that's obvious.
How is the morale among Ukrainian soldiers?
During the operation, once we pulled back to Mariupol, for the majority of this operation, I spent in a bunker at Battalion HQ because as I said, I refused to fight. But from what I saw from the guys in there, a lot of guys were ignorant of the situation, and their morale was like normal. It wasn't till the last week when the airstrikes started getting heavier on our position, which was in the Metalist factory. That's when they started realizing that the Ukrainian government's like left us. I said to them ages ago that they've left us, like there's like, I don't know what you expect for this to go. So, like, it wasn't until the last moments that the Ukrainians started feeling their morale, like, go. Everyone started becoming silent and realising that they're going to lose, which I said to them was going to be from the beginning.
And what about the relation towards Zelensky? What is your relation to him? And what's the relation among the Ukrainian troops towards him?
I can't say too much about the Ukrainian troops because I never really asked them about what they think about him. But like after this, like after Mariupol, like I said it before, like he left us. He told us in better words, is like look at Mariupol before, and then look at it now. Like if we had left Donbass, like. Mariupol would still be a city. Right now, it's graves. Like, especially from other like journalists who were following DNR and Russian forces. I saw them giving interviews to civilians who were inside Mariupol, talking about how the Ukrainian military and Azov were like using like the cover of like civilian occupied buildings to fire from. With their tanks and whatnot.
By the way, you know in Donetsk, 10 years ago, it was Euro 2012.
Yeah.
Football tournament. Donetsk, you're actually in what I consider to be one of the world's great cities. A beautiful city. It was called the City of a Million Roses. Twinned with Sheffield, actually, our own Sheffield. We've had a lot of words today, Aidan. From a concrete point of view, what would you be willing to do to atone for the evil that you admit that you've been a part of? How can you propose that you would make amends for that?
If this exchange doesn't go through, I would help rebuild. And that is needed, especially after like Mariupol, because civilians there now, like, there's people that have no homes, they've lost their families. It will probably be 10 years till Mariupol looks at least somewhat resemblance of what it looked like before.
So you're physically, there is one option that you're prepared to physically atone for the evil that you've done by helping to rebuild Donbass.
Yeah.
Okay. And there is another option, that a prisoner exchange. Your hope is in a prisoner exchange. Okay. If it were a prisoner exchange, if that were to happen, what would you do next?
Leave Ukraine. I previously told my wife she left Ukraine because of the operation and the safety in Mykolaiv at the time. So she's now waiting to get a visa to go to Britain to be with my family. And I've already told her, like, once this is finished and hopefully I return, we're going to live in Britain, build a family there, and just forget about Ukraine, because after this I don't want to be in Ukraine. Especially...
What is Ukraine for you now? What does it represent?
Disloyalty. Forgetful. I can't remember these words. It's been so long since I used English.
Do you mostly communicate in Russian?
Sozhuk.
Ah, I get you, I get you.
And broken English as well.
I get you, I get you.
But...
In the UK, you understand the position is unconditional support for Ukraine. Oh, you've left London. The Ukrainian flag was up in the BT Tower in London. What would you say to those avatars in Facebook?
Don't promote war. I think it was a week or 2 weeks after the operation was starting. I can't remember. I think it was Putin, President Putin, proposed a peace deal to President Zelensky. It was 2 weeks after, mm-hmm. wanted. And in this peace deal, Ukraine made its request, which was security guarantees, so that if it's invaded in the future by any country, that it would be protected by security guarantees. And Ukraine picked its security guarantees. Russia said, okay, that's good. But then where the issue came from was that Ukraine refused to accept that Crimea was Russian. They also refused to accept that Donbass and Lugansk was independent, mm-hmm. and they would rather speak about it over 15 years.
Okay, so we've covered this point, that it was Ukraine drove to war by not accepting the will of the people of Donbass for these 8 years, instead deciding to shell and to kill. We've covered that. Okay, let's go down the road of there's a prisoner exchange. You're freed. All the media, because before you spoke to Sky, etc., and all the rest of it, they covered you. You were, you know, the Brit fighting for Ukraine, along with Sean Pinner, who's also in captivity. Let's go down the road of a prisoner exchange. Am I going to see? Are we going to see you in future renouncing everything you've said today, saying that I was forced to say this? It was, you know, it was dreadful. The Russians are, you know, all of these bad things that the media like to hear. Are we going to hear you, you know, walking back what you've said and saying that you were coerced or forced to saying this? Mm. That's not your actual position. I'd like to categorically, to really delineate what your actual position is without any pressure or coercion. And that's something that is going to be there as a record of facts, because we don't want a situation later on where...
Yeah, I understand. No, after this, I'm done. I have every day to think in my head mentally about what has happened, so I have time to reflect on it, and there's not a part of me that wants to do anything with Ukraine anymore. For me, I'm done with them. Like, I'm just going to go home, try to build my life and my wife. For me, that's my main priority. I don't care about anyone else. Like, for me.
And you accept it if that happens, how lucky you will be.
Of course. Compared to some of the other people, like that won't return to their families and stuff like that. Internally grateful that I'm still alive and given the opportunity to be exchanged, compared to some others who probably won't have that opportunity or don't have that opportunity.
You've got a tattoo that says "Happy Days."
Yeah.
So as you're now, I guess, hoping in the future, what would you like to say to? You know, you've mentioned the British government. What would you like to say to Boris Johnson in terms of his unconditional support of Ukraine? And what would you like to say to him?
So Boris Johnson, if you're watching this video, obviously you're aware of my situation and the situation in this area. Firstly, I'd like to say is help end this war. And I don't mean like militarily. I mean like help it be achieved by peace. 8 years is a long time for war. And with the new addition of this operation, we need to help finish it so civilians can return to their lives without the threat of bombs.
How should it be finished? On what terms?
I think what we said before with like what President Putin presented, I think that was a reasonable agreement. It's reasonable that...
So Donbass is independent?
Yeah, Donbass, Lugansk and Crimea is recognised as Russian territory.
Okay.
That's a reasonable request. I can't see why they wouldn't accept that.
Okay. We're almost gonna finish up, I think so. But I will finish in the last point. Oh, wait a second. Now, I'm going to get a load of hassle.
Yeah.
A load of stick from people, you know, saying that the terrible, the evil, you know, Kremlin propagandist, yeah, Ben Phillips, interrogated Poor Aiden, et cetera, the horrible, you know. I'd like to say from your side, we've chatted today from a Nottingham man to another. How's it been for you? And
it's good. I just want to point out he didn't get called like to me. I asked, like, I knew about Graham. I asked to speak to him because one, he's British and he's also a Nottingham lad. So it was me that asked like for him to come interview me because one is English and I know some of his work. But yeah, like, don't just jump on the bandwagon, like, look into the interview that we're doing now. It's legit.
Okay.
Can I add one more about the exchange for Boris?
Absolutely.
So Boris Johnson, this is my second request that I need you to listen. The DNR authorities have given the chance for us to be exchanged, and all they ask is that we are exchanged for Viktor Medvedchuk. A couple of days ago, his wife Oksana Medvedchuk made an appeal to Boris Johnson to exchange me and another British mercenary called Sean Pinner, so that Ukraine can release her husband, so he can return to his family. If this is not possible, then they would happily exchange us for another Ukrainian captive in Kiev who will have the possibility of returning to his family in exchange for us to also return to our family.
Okay. And we're going to wrap up. Is there anything else you'd like to add? We've chatted for the best part of an hour. Is there anything else you'd like to say, your final thoughts or words?
That pretty much sums it all up. I can't think of too much apart from how basically we were just left by our military. Did we cover that?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
We chatted a lot now, and time for you to rest.
I think that covers
rest and relax, I think, a little.
Yeah.